Perfect. So I think we can slowly start. And at the beginning, of course, standard stuff, which means let me introduce myself. Welcome on the memory analysis session. I'm really happy that you came. We've got a very cozy room, so this is very nice. If you've got some questions, and this is a standard thing, of course, do not hesitate to ask, because who, if not you, must leave this room with a little bit more knowledge, yes? So if you want to know something, just bring it on. First of all, of course, my name is Paula Januszkiewicz, and the surname clearly indicates that I'm somewhere from the Eastern countries, which means, in my case, it's Poland. And basically what I'm doing for a living, it's security-related activities. I'm a penetration tester. What I'm doing as well is the security-related projects. I got access to the source code of Windows. And with my team from Secure Company, we are basically analyzing different kinds of situations. Windows internals is clearly my passion. And of course, digging deep into the security world, different kinds of vulnerabilities, and so on. So this is basically myself. Welcome back, of course, if you've been on a morning session. It's great to have you again. And today, a few words. We're going to be talking about the memory analysis, as I already said. And the inspiration for this session was very clear. There were actually two things. First of all, it was my developer. The developer that is working for us, he's an amazing guy. He's super smart, quite unsocializing person, if you know what I mean. And he's really ashamed sometimes even to go to customer and say something. He's like, no, no, I will not go. He's like this. But you know what? These kind of guys, they usually hide something interesting inside. And our developer hides a very interesting thing, which is his hobby. And his hobby is to help people. Doesn't sound quite like catchy, right? But what he does, he is very much engaged in a different kinds of malware analysis forums, and he asks people to share the memory dumps. And he gives the whole story. Because when people have problem, they will give you everything just to solve the problem. And especially when they are in a tragical situation, it's like, I have to solve it right now. Michael says, just give me the memory dump. And they're like, take whatever you want. Well, I don't need to take whatever I want. As long as you give me the memory dump, I already have whatever I want. Because whatever is working, it's in the memory. And if you've already seen my session, probably you've noticed that I'm completely not a romantic person, completely 100% pragmatic. And basically, there is a couple of life guiding sentences that I'm following. And one of them is the one that I just mentioned. Whatever works, it's in the memory. So whenever you approach any kind of analysis and you are like sitting in front of your laptop and you are like, how does this work? Well, check out in the memory. Of course, it sounds like, yeah, piece of cake, we can do this every day, of course, yes. And it's completely not time consuming, completely not, especially whenever you've got like 16 gigabytes of memory, completely not consuming. So this is something that, well, it's a nice tiny truth that whenever we are fighting with something, trying to solve any problems, it's gonna be in the memory. And this, of course, developer Michael, what he does, he collects different kinds of users' passwords. This is a tiny hobby. Looks innocent, you will never tell, you know? Another thing that actually inspired me for this session was a situation of my friend. And my friend, basically, he is single, and he was attending this kind of, you know, conversation on the online dating portals. Who is on online dating? I don't have to put the hands up. But what was the situation is actually he was like chatting with the girl and she appeared to be nice. And then of course he had the date with the girl, and what appeared, I mean, it's like the stereotype of the story, yes? So the girl appeared to be older, not that nice, as he could imagine, like 10 kilograms more than he could believe in, and so on. And he was like very disappointed. And I'm like, listen, why don't you make a Skype call? Why don't you see her, like, you know, face to face? If you like her, you're going to go for the date. If you don't, then you're just going to refuse. And he's like, that's a pretty good idea. I'm going to do some research first. And basically, let's see what I can do. So he did, as I said, he made the Skype call, and the girl seems to be very, very nice. So he made an appointment with the girl, and when he's meeting with the girl, what he sees, the girl is a little bit different. Because what appeared that on the Skype call, there was this girl's sister. So we call it fail, hashtag. Anyway, what is the very unromantic conclusion? That a little bit more research never hurts. And this is very much applicable to the memory dumps, yes? So whenever you've got a memory dump, you can do the small research or the bigger research or even bigger research or even a super huge research. You can spend a whole week on sitting on one memory dump and there's gonna be still plenty of information to search for because memory dumps are like that. They're quite not very well described. There are still little things that are not clear, yes? So this is something that is really fascinating whenever, of course, we are searching for any kind of information in the operating system. And what we can find in the memory dump? Well, literally everything. Whatever works, it's in the memory. So if you do have an application that is, for example, well, I will not mention the names, but I'm sure that 30% of you is using particular type of app. It's a very much business-oriented application. Whenever it's connecting to the database, of course, if you make a memory dump of the process, there is a big, big chance that you're gonna find the password and the username, obviously, that is used to connect to the certain database. How to analyze such a tiny memory dump? And I'm gonna say something very unpopular, even in Notepad. Yes, even in Notepad. So this is something that we're gonna talk about. So. Small agenda, dumping techniques, memory dump analysis, live memory analysis, and we're gonna do, obviously, the summary. First of all, of course, at the end, to mention, as I said on the previous session, nobody comes out with an empty hands. All of the memory analysis tools that we wrote for the session, because all of the tools that I will be using, not every tool, but most of the tools, were written actually by us, because memory analysis subject is very much undiscovered, and if you need something special, you need to just write it. Unfortunately, it's a pain in the back if it's about time that you need to spend on such things. And what we're gonna use? We're gonna use the Mimikatz this time, and you might be like, oh, not again, Mimikatz, everybody's using Mimikatz, but I'm gonna actually use the version of Mimikatz that nobody has, because this is the PowerShell Mimikatz, and it's, as I said on the previous session, exclusive version to actually steal a couple of things from the server. Not only password, we don't care about passwords, yes? Password is cool and it's immediately rewarding, but I would like to show this to you within a little bit different stage. And it's gonna be also practical because, yeah, that's gonna be about certificates. I can tell it right now. So, volatility, of course, it's a tool that is a free tool, and volatility, you can be downloaded from the volatility website. This is one of the best, if not the number one, tool to do the memory analysis. And there are two versions of volatility if you are reconsidering. One is written in Python, and another one is just an executable. So if you make a choice, obviously more convenient is executable, but it's worse. And the reason why I'm saying this, if there is something new coming to the field, it's an open source tool. So all the modules that are for volatility are written by regular people. So whenever you play either Python, either executable, executable gets compiled later. So if you want to have something new, basically use the volatility in Python. Or maybe you are already using them, great. Okay guys, so the first thing we're gonna actually start from, and that's gonna be quite exciting, that's gonna be nothing but a demo. So the demo is called Hidden Process Crouching Handle. And what am I talking about? Well, first of all, let's start from this. What I will do, you see this malware.exe, what I will do, I'm gonna actually hide the process. And what I'm actually doing right now, I'm debugging this machine from the kernel level. If you go to the tools folder, you're gonna find the instruction how to do that, by the way. It's very easy, I'm using the WinDBG that I will pull in a second, so I'm gonna explain everything. But just to give you the summary what's gonna happen. This malware.txt, well, it obviously could be, who knows, it might be the malicious process. The question is how we are able to hide it. Because it's really cool whenever we see the rootkit or any kind of stuff like that, that you're gonna launch it and then it hides itself. Oh, but how does it work? So basically, whenever we are analyzing this kind of stuff, there is an operating system, one mechanism, not the easiest one, but very nice one, that is called active process links. Active process links. So what does it mean, this active protest? It means we've got some list of active protests and they are linked to each other. So it's a little bit like in the kindergarten, yes? When there's a new kid that is coming, like, hello, everyone, then they shake hands, and there's another kid coming, hello, everyone, and then they shake hands. So at the end of the day, you've got the whole line of kids. What am I talking about? But okay, you've got the whole line of kids holding each other's hands, and then here comes the question. If there is one kid, and this kid is vicious, and this kid wants to, I'm going to do something nasty right now. What he's going to do, he's going to take the Anna's hand and John's hand, and he's going to do like, root. So I'm out of this party. But am I still in the building? Of course I am. So what just happened? We modified the mechanism, the amazing mechanism that saves everybody time. I mean, we should really like this mechanism, because whenever you open up Task Manager like I did, you got the processes immediately. Thank you, Microsoft. We've got this. Very good. Of course, we could talk about Task Manager. That's a different story. But when you open up Task Manager, you got the processes just like that. And we are so used to this. Why? What would be the accurate thing? The accurate thing would be actually not to display something that is based on some sheet of paper, which is active processing. It's exactly like this. But if there was a mechanism going to every part of the memory and checking out, are you the process? No. Are you the process? No. Are you the process? No. And comparing with the list. Let me show you what do I mean by this. So, here we go. This is this malware.exe. And in the back, I have WinDBG connected. So this is debugging tools for Windows, WinDBG. You can download this, of course, for free from the Microsoft website. It's a part of the Windows drivers kit. So it's on the edge in between developers and IT pros. IT pros can definitely make a usage of this, for example, to analyze memory dumps, that's one of the things, and crash dumps, which means blue screens. So the list of commands you will find on the web page that I shared with you at the very beginning and at the end of the presentation. And what I did, I just took one kit, that in this case, it is the search indexer, like this, and also Task Manager, and I took the search indexer's hand that was pointing to malware, that was pointing to Task Manager, and then basically this guy went out, so this is malware, he goes out, and then this guy just holds the hands of this guy. So it's really a list. It's as simple as this. So what are we able to do? Well, now I'm going to do this handshake thing. So I'm going to, let me show you, of course, change the links of each process. And now I'm going to click go. I'm going to do this in front of my screen so that you can see how malware is disappearing. So I'm clicking go, malware, goodbye. You see? So, but malware is still working, by the way. So I'm going to go to full screen. This is actually this malware. Yes, this is actually this particular stuff. So it's, I named it, this is this body. Yeah. So basically, what is the case? The case is that to be able to find this process, we need to struggle a little bit. And that's the moment where memory starts to be very, very useful. And we need to know how everything works. That's why I called the demo crouching handle, because just because the client server runtime subsystem, so the process manager, simply summarizing this, just because this guy is the boss of every process that starts an operating system, he completely knows. And the process, without the valid process-related information, it's not the process. So how can it be? Is this active process links thing mandatory? Well, it is mandatory, but it can be a little bit misconfigured. So what can we do then? I mean, Process Explorer will not display that. But what we can do, we can go to View, and then, actually, let me run the Process Explorer as an administrator board, because, of course, I need that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to view and then lower pane view, and I'm going to display handles, and I'm going to go to client server runtime subsystem, and I'm going to search for any kind of weird looking handles. What does it mean? Well, let's see. Maybe there is something that has a weird look. So, and I'm sorry for this view because we need to go like this. I'm browsing handles right now, searching for the handle with the type process. But right now, I don't see anything suspicious. But the thing is that in operating system, we've got two client-server runtime subsystem, only one LSIS as .exe, but two client-server runtime subsystems, and I can search also in the other one. One is for the user-related activities, another one is for the system-related activities. And I can, of course, search further. And here we go. So this is our malware. Non-existent process, 2688. How can we check that, and how can I prove this to you? Well, very simply, 2688. Let me break it into the debugger. And I'm going to do exclamation mark process, 0N2688, and with the zero flag to display the basic information. Ta-da-da. And we've got clearly information about the process itself. Why it is hidden? It's not really hidden, isn't it? It's just a list that we played with. But how else, if not like that, we can find it from the memory? Very good. So this is how the malicious stuff can hide from our eyes. And at the end, here comes, of course, a tiny thing. How we can do this, how we can search for this kind of stuff on the memory dump, if you have doubts, by handles, as we see. So I would like to show you, this is just the beginning of the presentation, we haven't really started, it's just an intro demo. It's not a threat, it's a pleasure. Okay. How we are able, of course, to find this information. So have a look. I made, before the presentation, tiny thing. The reason why I made it is because it really takes time, so nobody wants to really wait for that. I used volatility on the memory dump. So the command goes like this. Volatility in Python, I'm using Active Python for that, so it's a very useful thing. Python and Active Python. Active Python has the same role as PowerShell. When you just have the PowerShell script, you can just run it whenever you are within the Active Python. So we've got minus F stands for file. I'm serving the dump over here, so the longest part is actually the dump name. And then I'm specifying the profile. Unfortunately, if it's about the Windows 8 analysis, it's still ongoing, yes? People are writing scripts to analyze the Windows 8 memory patterns. So stay tuned, because it's really ongoing right now. And then PSScan. PSScan, this is something that we call a module. Module in volatility. So if you want to write your own module and count all the letter A's in the memory dump, for example, you could do this and then you put it over here. Yes? So everything is in Python. And what was I able to find? So let's have a look, because PSScan, as I said, takes time, but it's very effective because it does not search based on the active process link list, but it searches by handles that client-server runtime subsystem has. And this is what I just showed you, but this is another picture, another side of it. Very accurate information. And that malware.exe was found. Of course, E is missing, but that's how we have with the memory dumps. But of course, we could do this, the following. The same type of command, but PS list. So the same dump, but a different module. That's going to be like bam, bam, bam. We got everything that we want. Of course, it takes some small time. My dump is about 1 GB. And here, what we cannot see, is the malware.exe. It's completely not there. So hopefully you see the difference. Whatever works, it's gonna be always in the memory. So let's move on. Let's take me this machine. And let's move on. So the whole situation reminds me a little bit something like this. And maybe cat, it's not a good comparison. If you don't have a cat, but you've got kids, it's the same story, yes? The kids are hiding behind the carpet or whatever, and they're like, nobody can see me, yes? But the whole body is out, yes? This is the cat's approach. Like, cat is playing with you. It's like, ho-ho, stupid owner, he cannot see me. Yes? So this is pretty much the same situation like we've got with the non-existent process. Very much the same. The process, of course it exists. Of course the cat is here, everybody can see the cat, but not much details. We don't see the cat's face. So we don't see, of course, the process name. It's very much the similar analogy. Okay, guys. So memory dumps the purpose. why do we make memory dumps? How do we make memory dumps? And what can we find in the memory dumps? So the purpose is very simple. Whenever, of course, you want to analyze any kind of malware, analyzing memory dump, it's an amazing approach. Actually, I was mentioning the very interesting project that we're participating in the morning. Let me repeat it, but from a little bit different context. So the project was obviously with an administrator that was sabotaging the company, and we were trying to investigate whatever was on his laptops. It was a really scary situation. And what we were doing, we were, of course, doing the whole analysis of everything that we could find. Starting from the disk, ending up with whatever was in the memory, and finding the inconsistency in between different kinds of events, correlations, and a lot of work. So basically, what we were able to find from the memory of this administrator were the log files, event logs. And these particular event logs were the ones that he opened before. It was a long story. What we were able to extract from the memory were the event logs. I will show you how to do that. And after that, we were able to find out that when the whole factory, because it was a factory, was stopping the production, I mean, as I said, serious case, the factory was stopped, these guys' logs within the 3 days were missing. It was a strange correlation. Like factory stops, events in log missing. Factory stop, event in log missing, yes? So it was too logical and too much correlated not to really make him a suspected person to do such things. And everything was to be grabbed from the memory. Why? Because he opened that logs and he did not reboot his computer. And they were loaded to memory standby and we were able to grab them out from the memory. Just a small mistake. Sorry, buddy. So, the next thing, of course, regarding the whole purpose, is to make the analysis of the problems. So basically, whenever you've got the problems with application is crashing, something is wrong, yes? You are searching for the reason why a certain code fails. What you can do actually from the memory when the application is running, you can make a memory dump and extract the, tomorrow I'm gonna be showing the tools to do that, to extract the whole piece of code, and then you are able to recompile the application one more time. So you can grab the application from the memory and recompile it and have the running application aside, based on whatever, of course, is in the memory. There are two approaches how we can solve the problem. One is XPerf, obviously an amazing tool, part of the Windows Performance Toolkit, Windows Performance Analysis Toolkit, and this is basically another one, making a dump. So how to make a memory dump? Because we're talking about these dumps, and now it's time to do something interesting, yes? So there are two types of dumps, two. One is the process dump, another one is the system dump. The system dump, obviously, we used to call it, we dump the whole physical memory. Yes, the whole RAM goes to the disk. So this is the system dump. It dumps both the user mode and the kernel mode. But if it's about the process dump, we are basically doing the tiny memory dump from the process perspective. So how to make this process dump? Is it difficult? It's actually super duper easy. So how to do that? First of all, I'm going to run the tool that is loved by everyone, which is yes? And how to make a memory dump? Very easily, right click, and we can create a dump file. And again, not a big philosophy, what can we do else with this? Well, we can analyze it in a certain way. I'll show you. For example, we can make a memory dump like this from the local security authority subsystem, yes? So this is where the dump is placed. Well, forgive me, I'm going to not analyze my own dump because you're going to know a little bit too much about myself. You know, all my dark secrets and all the nasty stuff that I'm doing in my personal life. Oh, maybe not that much, but let me actually show you the demo. So here I got a demo, local security outdoor subsystem. So this is this dump. I'm going to right click to it and I'm going to open it in the debugger. Why am I able to open it like this? Because within the courtesy of amazing person, Andrew Richards, he is the one of the authors of the defrag tools on Channel 9. If you have nothing to do in the winter afternoon, go there and watch the movies, 100 and something, very good. He basically, on his SkyDrive, if you go to the defrag tools, he published a link. And that link gives you all of the shortcuts that are needed to have this kind of shell configured like this. So this is really nice. Andrew Richards, Defrag Tools. I'm going to open this dump in the debugger. Very good. And what do I see over here? Well, basic information, like that this was the Windows 8 and so on, and the dump was made some time ago, and my system uptime and the process uptime. So very basic information about that. What can I do as well? Well, there is a reason why I made the dump of the local security authority subsystem, because if I load the library that is called dot, first of all, dot load mimilib, like this, where do I get this library from? From Mimikatz. Yes? There is this tiny DLL that always travels with Mimikatz. That's the one. Yes? So whenever you've got the memory dump, we can of course load this library, and this library will allow us to service this dump. So I mean, this is a user-friendly tool. That's what I understand. This is the instruction. Oh, I don't know what to do. I think I need to run Mimikatz. Yep, and here we go. What we are getting, of course, from the process itself, it's nothing but the clear text username and passwords of the people that were currently logged on to this box. So imagine, you know, if you are administering the terminal server or file server, you are the boss. You're clearly the boss. If you make a memory dump on the terminal server and you're going to analyze it like that, I'm sorry, you got the passwords of everyone. Yes? I told you, memory dump is very nice. Okay, so this is the local account, this is the domain administrator. Well, whatever happened, yes? It doesn't really matter. I just want to show you the difference that we've got two types of the username and password. So this is basically what we can find. How else we can make the memory dump? Well, basically, we can go to things like Process Hacker and do the same. Process Explorer, right-click, create dump, do the same story. Prots dump is pretty interesting. So basically, let me run prots dump, and I'm going to run prots dump within the certain scenario. I got a very nice application. Developer can love. This is the memory leaking application. I mean, I'm not sharing this one particularly because it has nothing to practical to do besides doing the memory leak. So if you got, like, you know, people that you don't quite like, this is actually perfect. But for the normal usage, it's not quite good. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to do this memory leak. But before I do the memory leak, what I would like to do is to set up the small conditions on the process. So I'm going to use prots dump. Prots dump is actually the tool that is written by Andrew Richards. And I'm going to use, of course, prots dump leaky up, leakyup.exe, because this is the name of the process. And then I'm going to specify the conditions. So in this case, it's going to be minus p process leaky up. And if the application reaches inside 500 of virtual bytes, then terminate it and make a dump. This is a very nice way how we are able to make dumps when the application, one of the applications, for example, crashing. You can make it. You can make a dump on the termination. It's actually minus T minus MA parameters. And then when the application crashes, it's not like, oh, no, 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 I'm crashing, nobody can help me. No, the crashing is actually also something that is quite predictable within the operating system, and we can make a dump on crash. And then scandal this to the developer and say, you've got something to do. Yes? I'm quite cruel sometimes. I'm sorry. Anyway, let's go to the leaky app and let's specify here process ID 21020. I'm actually reading this from the task manager right now, so not a big deal. And then I'm starting this. What's this? Leaky app virtual bytes. Everything is okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. I need to specify the process. And here it's like this. Now it's good. So right now I'm starting the monitoring the process. And if I make a memory leak, that's going to be a pretty interesting scenario. Let me monitor the memory leak in the reasonable way. How we are able to monitor the memory leak? Well, many ways, but let me start as an administrator right now. The Process Explorer, let's do this within the Process Explorer. So here we go. And let me find the leaky app. Leaky app is over here. I'm going to go to sorted by name. And leaky up, it's over here. And I'm going to go to the properties. And within the performance, we are able to see here the virtual bytes. So virtual bytes, or virtual size in this case, it is basically amount of virtual memory that this application allocates. So let's make this application to work. If I click memory leak, what's going to happen? The virtual size will increase. And after it touches 500 megabytes, we will be having a dump, which you will see in the console in the back. It's going to wait for 10 seconds and then basically make a dump. So as you see, this application is leaking pretty well. Of course, this is the very bad example, yes? Because normally applications, they don't leak this way. They do this for a couple of days or hours and so on, yes? So you can clearly see the trend. But this is the, by purpose, badly written application so that you can see how the memory leaks look like. And if the application, of course, will continue, I will need to kill this app because otherwise I will not be able to do the presentation. Then, of course, and this is the moment, we reach 500 megabytes and 10 seconds, and then we are making the memory dump. So this is how you are able to monitor things. Yeah. So this is just a practical example how we are able to make the different kinds of memory dumps. Now, okay. So this is basically how we do it. And then what we do with this dump, we take it and we handle this to the developer, and developer will analyze it. Because if there is a memory leak, developer will spot that. Probably developers are like, oh, really? Yes. Supposed to be like this. Okay. So, let's move forward, yes? Another thing that I would like to talk about, it is basically another way how we're able to make the memory dumps. And how we're able to do this is basically within the tool, so let me actually get to the folder, that is called Dumpit. And this is this tool over here, Dumpit. What the Dumpit is, this is actually the tool to make the complete system memory dump. So, and again, if you've got 16 gigabytes of RAM, it's going to actually create a 16 gigabytes large file. So very nice. And it will catch everything. By the way, Michael, not really long time ago, told me, so our developer told me that one of the persons that was really having a problem with malware, but he was afraid to confess this in front of his administrator, business-related person. You see what kind of situation we are dealing with? It's more like a psychological forum than malware-related. What was actually happening is that Michael was able to pull the information, because this guy was an accountant, how much people earn in this company, because he was working within the database with all that kind of information. Really sad. So everything can be found, obviously, within the memory. Dumpit, though, it's an application that is written by Matthew Seuss from Monsoon Tools. And if you want to analyze the 32-bit operating system, it's free. If you want to analyze the 64-bit, for example, Windows 8.1 and so on, you need to pay $199. And don't get me wrong, I'm really bad at marketing. I clearly think and say that this is worth it. This is really worth it. Why? Because the friendliness of this app, it's definitely in place. So let's do that. Let's see what we can do. Let me basically go to the D and tools. Here we go. DN tools, and this is the app, and this is the whole toolkit with the old converters, like one format to another, one format to another, and so on. And Dumpit works like that. First of all, it asks me for elevation. It's signed. Well, it's signed by Matthew, so, you know, but it's trusted. And then it asks me, do you want to make a memory dump? Really? Like, I mean, could this be easier? Yes, click, and then memory dump is made. And now we are able, of course, to analyze it. And the next part of the session is going to be devoted to doing different kinds of analysis. Okay, guys, so Dumpit is a pretty good tool. Well, I mean, I'm not clicking yes, because the only thing we will see is that 16 gigabytes is written to the disk. Wow, such a big file. Okay, so what to search for? Whenever we've got this dump, what to search for? Well, obviously, sometimes we can be saying that memory analysis is quite boring, because we're going to search for what? Like processes, handles, services working, network connections open, and so on and so on. Well, whenever you are standing in front of the situation that is related to, I think I've got a malware, then yes, you will need to analyze everything you see. And that sounds not very nice. But of course, we do have things to have a look at. Additional registry keys and processes, exactly like in a memory operating system. Threads, of course, different kinds of hooks, and different kinds of event logs. So there's a plenty of objects to basically have a look at. And what is really also interesting is that within the memory dump, what you can search for, take it easy, and you can search for something that we are calling strings. And strings are at least three alphanumeric strings that were interpreted by strings.exe from sysinternals. It's an additional tool. And they will be displayed in front of your eyes. So you can see like, B, 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 yes, C, 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 C. And like, interesting, yes? Well, not really. But for example, what we can search within the strings are the different kinds of longer strings, which includes the compilation path where the code was compiled by the developer. When we were analyzing Stuxnet, that was a couple of years ago, our team was engaged in the whole process. What you could find in the strings, it was the whole compilation path, starting with the B drive. And at the end, it was Guava, Guava PDB. PDB, it's a symbol file, yes? So symbol file, it is more like a dictionary for the application. So someone was converting something that was named Guava. And this was within the Stuxnet code. Quite interesting. So sometimes we can find some keys, some traces in strings, but in general, it's not very informative. Okay, guys, therefore, we can always search for things like handles. And handles is a little bit more than files, because handles allow you to bring to action and export from the memory things that are, well, a handle. What is the handle then? Handle, again, it's like a handshake. So a little bit like with the skits. When you've got a file, a simple case is with the USB stick. When you've got a file that is open on a USB stick and you close the file, sometimes it happens that you can safely remove it, sometimes it doesn't. So what makes it to safely remove it? Closed or open handle. When the handle is opened, you cannot safely remove it because it's opened. When you close the handle, obviously, then you can safely remove it. So this is basically how handles are working. We, of course, have a different kinds of handles, like threads, different kinds of processes, event logs, different kinds of DLLs, drivers, and so on. So there's a plenty of registry hives. There's a plenty of things that we can have a look at. It's exactly like we were doing at the demo number one, when we were searching for handles within the client-server runtime subsystem to the hidden process. It's exactly the same. So what kind of information can we grab? Let's dig in. First of all, I would like to show you, and this demo is going to be pretty long, how we are able to analyze different kinds of memory content. So the first thing that I will do, basically, I'm going to make the following thing. So I got the same dump that I was using. I'm going to use volatility, as you see, and I'm going to use the same dump, but this time I'm going to use a different module. So again, I just changed one thing over here. This is this. And I'm going to export all of the DLL types that I've got in the certain memory dump, the information about the DLLs. Why? Because what I'm searching for right now, I'm searching for, can I, for example, extract the log files from the memory? Because I would like to know what was happening in the operating system. This is actually a pretty geeky thing. It's not the easiest thing. I will, of course, explain everything. So what I'll be doing, I'm going to be exporting event logs. But why am I relating to the DLL? Who hosts the service of the event logging? That's the question. Come on, guys, wake up. Are you there? Okay, good. So it's going to be SVC host. SVC host hosts a service for event logging. But is event logging service then an executable or a DLL? Here we go. It's going to be a DLL. So we need to search for SVC hosts, and we need to basically relate to the DLL. So DLL is quite passive. Yes? What we will be working on is actually process ID, but we need to know which process ID in the memory, so technically which SVC host, was actually responsible for event logging. And when I find this SVC host, I'm going to export handles that are relating to the event log files, and I'm going to have files. memory analysis is very much like this kind of very flat thinking. I need to think where I need to get to so that I will be able to get somewhere else. Let's do that. So I'm going to be exporting this, of course, within the DLL list. And the next thing that I'm going to go, I'm going to open this DLL list in Notepad, and I'm going to search for the DLL that is responsible for the event logs. And that takes a small moment, about 30, 40 seconds. Here we go. Yes. So we've got that. DLL list one. Yes, I'm going to just open it. And it opened in Notepad. Very good. And it looks like this. These are all of the processes with different kinds of loaded DLLs. So what am I search for? I'm going to search for Control F, and this is WEVT, and this is more than enough, and it's of course SVC, not APIT, but SVC, which represents the service. So this body is actually event logging service. Found it. Not. So now, what we're going to do, have a look. This is actually hosted by SVC host with this process ID. Let's copy it then. Because what I will need to do to export the handles, read event logs from this body. So what I would do, and that's going to be the next stage, basically, I'm going to specify the different module. It's kind of simple. I mean, it's not a big philosophy to change all the modules over there. Yes, it's all the same command over and over again. I'm just like changing modules. But we need to learn how to read them, of course. Dump files is the module. And I'm going to, of course, dump files with the specific parameter, with specifying, of course, the process ID minus P. And the process ID paste was 848. This was this SVC host process ID. And then I'm going to specify the directory. And in my case, the directory is called file handles. So file, handles, and we got it. Perfect. Yes. So let's see basically what we're going to get to file handles. And that's going to be event logs. But you know what? This is really funny. Life would be so cool if this was done. Unfortunately, it's not. What it exports us are the handles to the places where the event log is. But is this a really event log? Unfortunately, event log is a quite sensitive file. So this is the moment when we had to jump to the place, jump to the field, and where we supposed to, what? Dump file. Not dump files. Well, the files may be dump, but not this time. Okay, thank you. So basically, what we will be able to see right now is the exported handles that have some content. But then, this is the moment that we need to, of course, rethink it. Because unfortunately, and this is the whole list, unfortunately, we do not have any kind of analyzer for that. We do not have any kind of converter. So we wrote one. Ta-da. So this is where the stairs are beginning, yes? Because how to build appropriate log files if we have such a trash? And what I will do, basically, I'm going to go to the folder and show you how these things are created. So let's see. I'm going to go to the C drive. I got, of course, Python, and I got scripts, and I got these file handles. And these are the ones that I have just created. So they are like growing slowly, slowly, as you see. I'm going to sort them by size. And some of them are like some images. Some of them, they look like event logs, but they're not. Can we change the extension? Well, you can, but this will not work. So we need to basically write some special tool that's going to help us out to recover the log files from the memory. So we are almost done. We are actually done over here. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take this whole crap from here. It is really a bunch of crap. And I'm going to go to the tiny folder here, and that's going to be EVTX recovery. And I'm going to put this in folder. This is our tool. You can download this from the tools folder on the website. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to do a very simple thing. So let me go to the command prompt, and I'm going to simply go to desktop and tehet and mem EVTX recovery. Very good. And I got here, of course, this in and out. So I'm going to do like this. EVTX recovery in, out, out. Yeah, it's a blunt logic. Don't laugh. Okay. So here we go. And now we will be able, of course, to see the stuff appearing in the out folder. This folder is empty right now. I am exporting all the stuff so the events are recovered right now. And I'm able, of course, to see eventually a couple of good looking event logs. So this one, this file is already ready. And we've got, in this case, 2100 events recovered. I can take this buddy, double click on it, and let's see if everything's going to open correctly. Still opening in the event viewer. Event viewer is loading, and perfect. And we've got perfectly recovered logged from the memory. And instead of analyzing processes and so on, we can clearly analyze what was happening in the operating system. Ta-da! Very simple, right? The tool is on the website, yes? So if you want to do this kind of analysis and you are very much in the subject, you can help yourself with this, no problem. So this is basically what we see and how it looks for us. Okay, good. Let's move further. What kind of other stuff we've got and what can we have fun with? Well, first of all, whenever we are, of course, analyzing the memory, there is a bunch of things also to have a look at. And in our case, I would like to show you, based on the example with volatility, so let me play with the dump, what else we can see. So this is basically, and again, volatility. I'm going to specify some other memory dump that I've got. I will, of course, specify the operating system profile. And in our case, it is so profile equals Win7SP0. It's not Service Pack 0. It is how I'm defining the profile, so it doesn't matter really. And X64. And then I'm going to specify, because we are in Spain, it's going to be Consoles. Enter. So Consoles, or Consoles, this is basically something that allows us to see what people saw when they were executing different kinds of commands in operating system. So if you are after attack and you are like, I wonder what hacker saw, no problem. If he did not reboot, obviously, the machine, you are able to see, and that takes a small moment, clearly to see what other people saw. So this is pretty nice. Another thing, so let it run. Another thing that we can do is the CMD scan. It's another parameter. And CMD scan is actually allowing you to see what kind of commands were executed. So this is even better, yes? We need to wait for the moment. As I said, memory analysis requires small patience, but here we go. So my memory dump is very small, and it still takes some time. So what can we see over here? Have a look. So this is the beginning of the command. So hacker was getting into PSExec and so on. And he was also entering some folder, eventually running Mimikatz or anything. He even made a typo. Congratulations. We can see, of course, clearly, besides that, what he saw. So if he did CDX64, deer, we can see the result of deer. We can see everything that this person saw. If we are wondering about if this person saw the password, well, we can also check this out. And eventually, yes. And so on and so on. So as you see, and this is something that also was there, netstat was running, some echo was running, and copy, malware SRV, good. So something positive is going on. And a couple of other things like, as you see, who am I, services.msc, blah, blah, blah. Yes. So clearly we can see that. Of course, as I said, in the memory, we can get basically everything. Okay, guys. Another thing that I wanted to show you regarding, of course, the memory, it is something, and this is a tool, that we called Passware. And Passware tool, I showed a little bit within the precon. Let me, of course, have a look at this. This is the Passware. It's a password recovery kit forensic. Is this a good tool? Yes, it is a good tool. It's not a free tool, though. Yes, but it's a very helpful tool. Is there a way how I could show you this without this tool? Yeah, but we will be sitting this for a little bit longer time. So I simplified it to the one tool. So analyze memory and decrypt hard disk. What am I going to be doing? I'm going to be extracting the 48-digit recovery password from the memory that is used to protect the drive of the BitLocker. And I'm going to combine it with the stolen laptop image drive. So if I'm able to make a memory dump, for example, through FireWire, and I see FireWire is on, great, now I can run and steal the laptop. It's a good way to work like that. But then next, what I will do, of course, and this is the small thing that is running, for the next 2 minutes, we don't need to wait for it. I'm going to be back when it's over. What it's going to do, it's going to analyze memory for the 48-digit patterns, and then it's going to apply them to the disk. And if it's able to read that data, then basically he will display me the information that for this disk, this from the memory 48-digit recovery password is ready. So what is the lesson learned? Disable FireWire. As simple as this. It's not a problem with BitLocker, really. It's a problem with any kind of cryptographic solution. Whatever works, it's in the memory. And to be able to get access to the drive, we need to have something unencrypted to get to the decrypted state, obviously. So where it's going to be? In the memory. As simple as this. So this buddy is working. Okay, guys, I'm going to be back to this. Another thing regarding the memory analysis, and as you see, this is a pretty long demo scenario. It is actually, let me get to my tools folder, it is something that is called Yara. And Yara, it is the free solution to which there is a very, very good documentation. You can, Yara user's manual, only 24 pages. What you are able to do, you are able to analyze memory whenever you are searching for the different kinds of malware from the patterns perspective. If you are searching for different kinds of patterns, like for example, we had different kinds of malwares already. Do you know Zeus? Yes, some of you do. Mm-hmm. Zeus was one of the malware, of course. It was pretty popular because it was targeting many countries. And Zeus, when he was installing itself, left different things in the memory. And if you have Zeus, you've got some things in the memory. Very logical. So Yara allows you to scan memory using different patterns. So for example, let's say if Zeus had in memory 3 times in a row letter A, and it had a mutex that had this name, and there was something in the memory found, something else, and if we have these three rules combined, then tell us that we've got Zeus. How do we find these rules? Well, people write them. Malware analysts write them. You need to search them in the internet, unfortunately. But people who are analyzing malware write them, and it's not the unpopular tool. No, no, no. It's a very popular tool, actually. So, what we're going to do, what we're going to play with, it's going to be first, and in case of Zeus, we've got Zeus YAR, and this is a set of rules. I will show you how it looks like. And Zeus VMEM. This is the memory dump of the virtual machines with Zeus. And do we have Zeus? That's the question. We do. Answer is, we do. Really cool. Because it allows you quickly to check out if you've got something. And for the popular and also unpopular malware, this Yara rules, they are basically ongoing. And it's not that hard to write one. So this is something characteristic. Yes, we've got mutex, we've got pipe for communication, and a couple of other things that are characteristic in the memory. And if all of those are there, you've got Zeus. So we can also make the memory analysis to this stage. Okay, guys. So this is basically how we have it. Let's have a look at the BitLocker. As we see, we've got here the 48-digit recovery password, also extracted from the memory. Everything is there. So don't share your memory dumps. I'm trying to say it in every minute. Okay. The next thing, of course, that I would like to talk about, it is the live memory analysis. And we're going to play with different kinds of approaches. So this is the next part, live memory analysis. And we're going to play with certificates. What do I mean by this? So is it possible somehow, somewhere, to export certificates from the remote web server over there, so that we can capture the private key and establish and or be man in the middle within the whole communication and or eventually spoof the HTTPS with the stolen certificate. Yes? So we could do the DNS spoofing and say that this is us, we got a certificate and we do have certificate. Yes? So basically, of course it is. Is this a vulnerability? No. So let's move along. I'm not really ironic right now. It is a tiny problem, yes? And this is basically what we've got in the architecture of the operating system. What I will do and how does it work? Well, let me explain everything to be super fair, how everything is combined. So the first thing that I will do, let me go to the server. And this is the node one. So let me go to view, full screen mode, and let me sign in as administrator. Why? Because you have to be the one. Because you have to be the one. If, for example, hacker at some point manages to be the boss, then he will be able to grab the certificate from the server. How does it work? Well, in tools, I got, and this is the moment when I'm really proud, what we've got, or not like this, but like this, we've got the kind of exclusive version of Mimikatz. The reason why I'm showing this, and if you want, of course, I can share, is because within this particular Mimikatz, we are converting the Mimikatz binaries into Base64, and we are executing them on the remote machine through WinRM. So basically, the Mimikatz scripts never reaches the disk. There is no trace on the disk that something happened. The only trace that we've got, it is basically in the memory dump on the WinRM servicing process. So it's kind of stealth. So how to do that? Well, simple thing. I'm going to open, of course, invoke Mimikatz. And let me go basically. So this is a good place. Yeah, it should be a good place. We can, of course, go to the place where I have everything. So this is in desktop and this is in tools. Very good. And what am I able to do? Well, first of all, let me install this, invoke Mimikatz bank. And now I'm going to invoke Mimikatz by extracting the certificates from the remote server. And what kind of certificates that's going to be before we, of course, do the whole thing? Everything requires explanation. So let me go to the other machine and let me show you the whole thing. Let me authenticate and we are almost there. So this is the machine that we're going to be attacking. Let me run full screen mode first. Windows cert mgr.msc. And in the personal store, we've got, as you see, the contoso.com for server authentication. If we want to, we've got, of course, corresponding private key. If we want to export the whole stuff, so export, next, the private key during the certificate generation was marked as not exportable. Really? It's just a file. Maybe I'm just spoiled. But you know, how file can you tell you, like, no, sorry, you cannot export the key. And you're like, oh, this is just a file. It has this key inside. So how we are able to do that? Well, make a memory dump. So we're going to do that. And we're going to export this key here. So of course, let's dig in. Invoke Mimikatz. Not like this. Oh, one, a little bit more letters. Invoke Mimikatz. No, oh, come on. Invoke Mimikatz. Oh, now it's better. Uh-huh. And now we're going to specify, of course, computer name like we've got. And our computer name that we want to target, it is WS12R2-DC, not an easy name, secured.tech. And we are specifying parameter that is called dump certs. Pink, come on, yes. And now we can, of course, enter, press enter. And now what it does, it streams the whole Mimikatz code to the memory through the WinRM, because that's how the Mimikatz works. It exports us the certificates. Let me show you basically what gets executed. Nothing but the 2700 line script, unfortunately. But this is the thing. This is the thing. This is where the code is converted to the binary stage and it's streamed to the server, executed from the memory, and we are having the result back. So that's pretty cool. What do we see? Well, first of all, we've got here this current user. So this was the personal store, PFX file. PFX means that we do have a corresponding private key. The question is, of course, how we are able, so it's the same story, how we are able to install it. Ah, I need to put the password. But whenever you have the certificate extracted from the memory, let me copy this body, copy, you are actually having as well the private key. And Mimikatz, what it did, it actually extracted, so let me go to my tools, it actually extracted the whole stuff with the private key and it put the weird password to it. So what I just did, let me copy this guy, copy, and I'm gonna paste it over here. I just wonder if this is working. Oh, not really nicely. Let me close the box. Sometimes it's like that in Hyper-V. So apologize, but I have nothing to do about that. I'm gonna reopen the window, and then the copy paste will work because I could not paste the whole thing. Yes. So it's sometimes like that. Okay, now it's good. Let's log on again. When the window is for a longer time, that's at least in my box what is happening here. Okay, so we can take this body one more time. So copy. And then we can paste it. I'm going to paste it to my tools. So I'm going to paste it somewhere over here. Yes? So ding, paste, and copy and replace. Mm-hmm. And we've got the cert system store and so on. So let's do the thing. Let's extract all the private keys that were with this certificate, so CLS, and I'm going to use for this the OpenSSL tool. You know OpenSSL tool? Of course you do. So OpenSSL is going to actually do the job very, very nicely. So what I'm going to use? Well, first of all, OpenSSL, and then I'm going to use the parameter defining the standard, PK, CS, and then 12. I'm going to use the password command, and then I'm going to specify the password pass Mimikatz, because this was how Mimikatz set it up when it was streaming them from the memory. So the next thing that I'm going to do is, of course, I'm going to specify the input, and in our case, this is this certificate, this is the name, and then I'm going to specify the parameters to export that particular keys. So it's CL, certs, and then notes. Here we go, like this. Yep, and notes. So let's see if we can export the unexportable private key. Of course we can. So being stubborn sometimes makes sense. The Polish people are known to be stubborn, by the way. Maybe you've seen it. So I got it after my grandfather. I'll tell you something. My grandfather is a very special person. It's older generation. So basically he has this approach that whenever he pays for something, whenever he, let's say he buys a radio, tiny radio, he paid for it. That means it's fully his. Each part in this radio is fully his. When he's going to put it into pieces, and that's what he does, not turns on, like turns on, plays, okay, not interesting. He puts it into pieces, yes, and he's like, pieces, yes, and it's like, this works like this, this works like this, okay. And then he pulls everything apart, plays, and now the radio is interesting because it's fully his. So it's a little bit like this in the operating system. Maybe you grandpas that have a pretty much similar approach. But thanks to this approach, we are, of course, getting a little bit more details in what is working in the operating system. Okay, guys. So, interesting so far? Good. Questions? You know that we could keep going like this for a couple of hours, yeah? Okay. I got one, of course, more demo for you regarding this. And that's going to be playing with the Kerberos tickets. I will show you, of course, how to export them, and I will show you what is the dependency, how to assign it to your own account, and how to check out what kind of tickets you are managing. This is actually a pretty big problem, because whenever you, and this is the problem, whenever you log on as an administrator, for example, to the certain workstation, or as anybody, to the certain workstation, normally what happens when you log off, I'm not mentioning the hashes, let's put the subject aside. When you log off, the password, it's not a clear text password, but it's almost like a clear text password because you can decode it. It is basically in the memory, but when you log off, it is in the memory for a couple of minutes and then it's cleared out because local security authority subsystem does not need it anymore. But what about Kerberos tickets? Is this staying in the memory or not? Well, I mean, if it wasn't staying, probably I would be not talking about it. So it is staying in the memory, and we are able to extract it, assign it to our session, and then move along and get something that is called golden ticket. It's not really a big philosophy, to be sincere, because this is how it is. It is in the memory, so we just extracted it, and that the whole philosophy is in assigning this to your session. So let's have a look how we are able to proceed with this. And this is actually a pretty nice demonstration. So let me take the whole things out, and let's dig in into the Kerberos tickets. Therefore, the reason why we're talking about it is because the Kerberos tickets are cleared out from the memory whenever you reboot your computer. Or, by default, Kerberos tickets is valid by 10 hours, and it's expiring, so Kerberos ticket, well, it expires and that's just it. But obviously, the golden ticket phrase that I'm sure you've heard about many times, it's from the Willy Wonka's factory. It's a security term for the ticket that you can generate for yourself. It's very easy to do this, to be valid for the next 10 years. And it's not prone to the password changes. So if you change the password as administrator, but someone grabbed the golden ticket, well, for you, this guy is administrator for the next 10 years till you, A, rise the functional level of the domain, because that resets the password of the Kerberos TGT account that is used to generate tickets. So, moderate. You may not do this for the next bunch of years, of course. And then, another way to remove these golden tickets, if we're afraid that there's someone that grabbed the ticket like that, it is basically to reset the Kerberos TGT's password. It's a disabled account. It's used for generating the tickets, as I said. We might be worried a little bit, though, about situations like, okay, how our applications will survive that. Well, technically, the resetting the password, it doesn't hurt. I talked to Microsoft guys, and they also said it's a good way how we are able to prevent it. So it's not me figuring out the ways. No. This is the way how you can expire the tickets like this. Of course, what is the side effect? From the user's perspective, not much. Tickets expire anyway. Yes, within 10 hours. But if your applications at some point is, for example, cashing the tickets and he's going to ask in 9 hours or something like that for the new one, there might be a problem. But you need to check, because every infrastructure is different. That depends how we are consuming tickets like this. So, okay, so let's see what we can do and how we're going to do that. Well, first of all, I am here logged on as Paula. So Paula here. Well, I'm going to launch the command line. Nothing special. Paula is the local administrator. To be able to analyze memory, of course, you always need to be a local administrator, because this is the debug privilege that you got. You are able to play with the different dumps. What I would do over here, I'm going to do the following. Dear, and then //, WS2012, DC, and then I got on the DC share. And we've got a very strange result. I really love these messages. I mean, I'm really enjoying this. Like, what they wanted to tell us. It's like in a poetry. Yes, the same story. So basically, we've got the username and password is incorrect. Excuse me? Were I giving the username and password that it is incorrect? What just happened? What we did, we used our current credentials. Local Security Authority subsystem used our current credentials that it is, as you saw, because I showed you from the dump, managing in the memory, and pass it through. And it's like, oh, it didn't work. So incorrect. You need to authenticate. Two independent workstations, not being the members of the domain. If you've got administrator and password, the same ones on workstation A, administrator and password on workstation B, if you both guys meet each other in Starbucks, you can browse smoothly resources of this guy over here without being prompted for username and password. That's how it works. Well, you know, to simplify things. So, basically, let's have a look. First of all, I'm going to also run klist, klist. Klist shows us what kind of tickets we've got in the memory, cached, and nothing. Because this account, it's nothing but a local account. So nothing really special. What I'm going to do, let's do the following. I'm going to keep this Paula. I can sign out, whatever. Let's lock it. And what I will do, I'm going to actually authenticate as administrator. as a domain user. So here we go, secure, administrator, perfect, password, like this. And what I'm going to do, of course, I'm going to enter this share. The reason why I would do this is because, first of all, show you that we can do that, which is very easy. So this is the thing. And I got here some files. Obviously, I can open them because I am the person in the domain acting as a domain member. So I'm consuming and using this certain ticket to access this certain place. Yes, I can whatever, copy these files out. I can do whatever I want. Yes, very good. Of course, still, if I run the console and I do clist, by default, at the beginning, we've got 5 tickets always cached. 2 are Kirby TGT tickets. 1 is SIFS. So this is for the file shares, for the file access protocol. And another ones are 2 LDAPs tickets. So how we are able to steal those bodies? Well. Have a look what I'm going to do. Administrator, sign out. I'm logging out. So everything should be technically cleared. But it will not be. So I'm taking Paula. And I'm logging on. And here comes fun. Because what I will do, let me open up another console, run as administrator. Of course, in this console in the back, I showed you that I don't have access. So let's move on over here and let's see how we are able, of course, to get the access to the certain place. So let's do that. First of all, I'm going to go to the Mimikatz. So we've got this folder over here. Oh, sorry. Kiwi. Mm-hmm. And quick check. Oh, yes, very good. X64, dear, and we've got here, of course, Mimikatz. My mistake. Let's go to another queue version. This is no longer unpublished. It was unpublished quite a while ago, small while ago, but it's already online. So you can do everything that I'm doing right now within the same type of the tools. So now I'm able, of course, to dig in, and this is where I've got Mimikatz. So I'm going to run Mimikatz. I'm going to, of course, get the privilege debug. The reason why it's like this, because otherwise you are not able to attach yourself to the local security authority subsystem. You're going to have the repeat from the Blaster XP 30 seconds when you connect to the internet and shut down. Yes, the same story. Okay, and then I'm going to do secure LSA tickets, export. And let's find the ticket that is the administrator's tickets from the memory. Let's see, secure LSA, okay, and export. And now, of course, the view is quite terrible, but we are searching for the place where here is going to be mentioned administrator, because that means it's going to be the administrator's ticket. Let's see if we can find one. Here we go. So this is the one. Let me take this body. Here we go. Back. And then we're going to assign it to our session. As simple as this. So how are we going to do that? So Kerberos, PTT, and then we're going to basically assign to our session tech.kirby the whole ticket. Enter, and we've got the successfully submitted for the current session. Very good. So now here comes the question. Will I be able to access the resources? K-list? Unfortunately, yes. Because right now I'm an administrator. As you see, 10 hours. To generate it within 10 days, it's right now really a piece of cake. If you want, on the tools, on the website, I'm providing the article that is called Useful Hacking Series, and you will find exact instruction how to deliver this. Yes? So, the next thing, of course, that we can do, we can try to access the share. But again, this is not a mystery. We see everything is like that. This is a piece of cake. Very easy thing, but thanks to this, we are able, of course, to still grab the alive things from the live memory. Okay, guys, let's move along. So, we were discussing about memory dumping techniques. I showed you an example scenario how we are able to extract things from the memory. And I showed you the different kinds of tools, different kinds of scenarios, different kinds of techniques, how we can make the memory dumps, and how we can analyze the memory dumps. There is still more than that, because the subject is super broad. I wish we could have here like a couple of hours, then it would be. But The next thing what we were discussing was the live memory analysis. What I was pulling from the memory were the certificates. This is what I was able to grab. And I was able, of course, to also get the information about the private keys, and I was able to make them exportable. So that's another place, another approach how we can what we can take. If we are searching for the good references about the memory analysis, what I would definitely recommend is the volatility. And if you are interested in the subject, write it down if you know it or remember it. Volatility is the fantastic step to start from. If you're like, oh, this is too difficult or something like that, volatility is the fantastic step to start from. It's an amazing tool. And you can go deeper and deeper and deeper. And if you cover this with Windows Internals book from Mark Krasinovich, then it's going to be the perfect match. So from the summary perspective, just a few words. First of all, and I hope that this was the lesson learned, never share your memory dump with someone else. It contains everything. Everything that you are currently working with, everything that you have opened. You can even, but it takes a long time, extract the print screen for what you were seeing within the memory, yes? You can also extract the documents that you were working on right now. If the database was running, you got this database because it's working, whatever works in the memory. So never share your dump with anyone. What you can share, though, is the small dump. So whenever you've got a problem with the blue screens, there is a small dump that you can create. You can configure this in advanced system settings in the computer properties, and this is something that you can share. And then someone can analyze it for you, or you can, with your friends, you know, Friday afternoon, analyze it with yourself. Okay. So, from the, of course, memory perspective, not sharing the dump is a good idea. And remember that any time you're going to have any kind of problems with applications, malware, and you are about to search some things, there are two approaches. One, XPerf, which I will definitely recommend. Another one is the playing with the memory, and that solves a lot, and if not every problem that we are ever experiencing. Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate your being here, and hopefully see you tomorrow at 8:30. Thanks so much.